fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland. We never weaken till the final siren's gone.
Good evening, Tiger Cast fans. Welcome to Mad Monday, the Monday night show. I mean, we're not completely finished up just yet, but it's Mad Monday for AFL, so why not roll with it? Hope you're all doing well from wherever you are around the world. We've got someone in Bali watching, Vince from Bali. There we go. Hope you're having a good time over in Bali, Vince. Gents, good evening and welcome. EJ, how are you, mate?
Good. Look at my guns.
Really
good. Really good. Plenty to discuss. I'm looking forward to it. Let's rip in.
CB, how are you, mate?
Good, mate. And Vince, if you're in Bali, mate, give my regards to St Kilda, Carlton, Essendon. I imagine there's probably about five teams from Victoria all rocking up there. It'd be half a chance
to see some players, I reckon. It'd be a very good chance.
Yeah. Hope you booked your tattoo session in early, mate, because I'll be getting absolutely flooded with requests.
And Greg, how's it going, mate? Welcome.
Yeah, good to be back. Yeah, really looking forward to discussing the game and the season as a whole. I think there's plenty to be taken away from this year, so looking forward to it.
That's it. So tonight's a little bit different. I guess we'll obviously talk about the Geelong game and then we'll do a bit of a mini season review. But outside of tonight, there's also going to be probably a few other bits and pieces that pop up with us, whether it's videos or lives, I'm not sure yet, but we want to sort of take a look at all the different players individually and different stats that EJ's got that we're going to sort through and talk about. So there'll be some other extra bits coming down the pipeline. But first, we do have to go with this one. And this has really pissed me off how this has been formatted. The North Melbourne Death Ride chart is complete. I've just dropped the last one down the bottom there, which they copped the loss against the Crows. But I've not. That's really annoyed me. But total losses. Yeah. Is it? Total losses for the Kangaroos, 17, which has netted us draft pick number 3. And that was on the back of trading pick 27 from last year and pick 20 from this year. So I would say that we've come out substantially ahead in that trade. And I was actually going back and watching the live from the draft night and just our reactions to what was unfolding and what chat's reactions were. It was very, very funny. So we'll have to repost and relive that somewhere down the line. But I think that's a job well done from Blair Hartley and co.
Yeah, and it is. I'm just bear with me. I'm on the AFL draft pick calculator. Back in a minute.
And for those who struggle to sleep, trust me, when you see EJ stats and numbers, that'll be the segment that's just going to knock you out and you'll sleep like a baby after that. It's going to just be so dry. It's just going to be, oh, my God. I need like 5 no-dos just before he starts talking on it.
Was it 20 and 27?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think if you're going point-wise, I think we've completely reamed them.
100%. I mean, the pick 20 that we gave up this year is going to blow out to like 26, 27 with Academy and Father Son and everything like that. Yep. Anyway, so it's going to be about the same pick that they get back this year that we gave up last year. But well done to Blair, but also thank you, Jade Rawlings. Thank you for the trade.
All right, the numbers are in. Before any pushbacks, 20 and 27 is equivalent to pick 10.
Oh, yeah, boy. Very, very good. That is... You can't go wrong with that. You can't go wrong with that. And I remember on the night we were laughing just about how could anyone make that decision. I guess North Melbourne had to bet on themselves, didn't they, at some point, but it's epically backfired. So now I guess the question, which will be maybe for another time, is what we're going to do with that pick. And there seems to be a lot of different speculations floating around, whether we just use the two, whether we split one. Or we'll do a quick poll. I think we're going to use pick 3 and I think we'll split pick 4. That's what I think we'll do. EJ?
All right. We're going to hold it up in front of North Melbourne and say, I got an ice cream. You do not have one. I hope we keep pick 2, which will be pick 3, and split the other pick.
Yep. CB, what do you reckon we'll do?
I concur with all you gentlemen. We will keep our first pick. We will split our second.
Grok, you have the same view. You reckon that's the best thing to do?
Yeah, I think best case for us would be if CDT is still on the board and the Eagles pass him up, because if that's the case, Essendon will come hard for one of the picks as a downgrade. They're really into him. But so Gold Coast. Gold Coast apparently have approached us for one of the picks to try and get in to get a player ahead of a Ewland bid. So, it'll be interesting to see what we do with that pick.
Yeah, looking at all the other clubs, I really do think that Gold Coast are the prime club to trade with because I want to get ahead and take a pick and then use later points instead of all the picks they've got. So I reckon that's our target mark to trade with them. I suppose player-wise, without going too deep into it, I still wouldn't mind if we split. That's why I reckon a Noah Hibbins-Hargreave can come into play to maybe pair with Tash Hotnick. He might slip somewhere in the teens. But there's a lot to play out, and it should be very, very interesting. But one thing I think we can say with certainty is Blair Hartley knows absolutely what he's doing, and we trust him 100% with whatever decision he makes. All right, we'll go into the Geelong game straight off the bat because there's obviously quite a bit to get through. But the Cats did knock us off. 14-19, 103 defeated Richmond, 9-10, 64 by 39 points. And look, I guess if we had it flagged at the start that we would only lose by 39 points, I guess everyone would have probably taken that, given with the state of the game. I know Grok, we were sitting together, and at halftime we thought that was going to turn into 100 points plus. I think at one stage, EJ, the lead got above 70 from memory. So the fact that it, in the second quarter is when they smashed us completely. But to get it back to 39 and to win the second half 7-3, even though, yes, Geelong would have taken their foot off the pedal, you still got to get the ball yourself and make things happen and score to reduce that reduce that margin. So I was happy with the fight. What did you make of the game and maybe in particular the fight back side of things?
Oh, look, I think I was really pleased that we fought back. That's been a hallmark this season, is even when we've been well beaten, we haven't stopped trying in the main. But if we are honest with ourselves, if Geelong didn't take the foot off the gas and they needed to, they could have smashed us by over 100. They looked really, really sharp. Everyone's talking about Geelong getting the soft run into finals. I think with an older few players in there, I think it's been helpful to be able to manage them a bit. I think they look really sharp.
They were sharp, CB. That second quarter, they just sliced through us. I think Max Holmes would have had to have had close to about 10 or 11 bounces during the game. He was phenomenal, and they did what a good team should do. It was a fairly accurate reflection of where both teams are at in a lot of ways.
No, I thought the umpires absolutely crucified us and really contributed to that result in the second quarter. I was waiting for someone to jump on me. I was actually taking the piss there. No, they belted the suitcases out of us, and talk about putting the car back into third and just going self-preservation mode for the second half to gear up for finals. That was pretty obvious. But look, that was a massive flex by Geelong in the second quarter. And the reality is that is exactly where the two teams are at. And it's just a realistic way to look at it. But the umpiring was hot dog poo, I'll say that. But it wasn't the reason we got smoked either.
No, it definitely wasn't. No, Grok and I did notice a few questionable decisions of sorts during the game, Grok. But what did you make of the game in totality? I mean, we were actually saying that we thought the first quarter we were competing quite well, but Geelong were just that bit above, and we actually converted a few of our chances as well. So I actually thought we started okay.
Yeah, I thought we were the better team for the first half of the first quarter. The only difference was just the disconnect between, again, the midfield and the forwards. Geelong just kept chopping everything off. The balls into the forward line were just poor. The stat that surprised me was, as I mentioned at the game, the disposal efficiency. We were about 15% higher than Geelong halfway through the first quarter, which was massive. It didn't look like it at the game. Geelong looked like they were cleaner, and they were. But again, the disconnect between the midfield and the forward line was insane. The second quarter, I think a lot of hard work went against us with some of the dodgy umpiring calls. And as I mentioned before the game, I called it, we ended up getting less free kicks than Gold Coast got against Port. Going into the game, I said to Michaels, watch us get less free kicks than Gold Coast did. And I think we got less by like four or something. We only got 12 for the game or whatever it was. But yeah, again, Geelong, the difference was the cleanliness with the way that they moved the ball with their kicking and their running. They hit targets that we just didn't do, especially in the first half. The second half were a lot better, I think, as the pressure dropped off from Geelong a little bit. But again, you still got to hit those kicks. So that was one of the biggest positives for me was the second half and just the way that we tightened up the execution, especially coming out of the back line. I think that's where a lot of it went wrong in the second quarter was just the turnovers coming out of half back and the overuse of handball. So I thought there was plenty to take out of it in the first half of the first quarter and the second half.
Yeah, I thought that I felt we kind of caused turnovers not so bad, EJ, but we just kept butchering the ball, whether it was via hand or via foot, and we were our own worst enemy. And good teams like they do punish you on turnover, and we were all lost at sea. But a player I want to highlight quickly, Sam Banks had 30 disposals. I think that's his first 30-possession game. It's just been really nice to see him nailed down that half-back role. And I guess a lot of us maybe felt he might have taken a backward step when Shorty come back into the side, but he's done the complete opposite. I think he's actually excelled in the role and made it his own, and I think he's had a super back half of the season.
Well, I think it actually helps the side when you've got two players that can drive out of the half-back because it's easier. When Shorty wasn't there, they could put a bit more time and effort into Banks.
Yep.
He probably gets a fraction more freedom. And I was pretty hard on Shorty at the start of the season. Since he's come back from injury, he's actually been pretty good too. So I think it's been beneficial for the side. And Banks, I'll be honest, I didn't think he had this level of consistent performance in him when I was watching him around last year. He's had a really, really good year. He's made the spot his own and all credit to him.
The consistency is a good point. I didn't think he had that in him either. CB Lynch and Seth Campbell were reasonably solid. I mean, Lynchy with three goals, Seth Campbell, two goals, none in disposals, three tackles, a clearance. I guess they both finished on high notes, which I think in a lot of ways Seth Campbell kind of deserved after the year that he's had. I know he's had a few down weeks, but on the whole, he's had a pretty good year.
Firstly, I didn't realise Lynch had a left foot, but when he laced out...
how was that?
That was a bit of a surprise to me. But,
and a left foot banana goal. Left foot snap.
But you know what? This is why I was pissed off at Lynch, because when he got rubbed out for five, that's exactly what we were missing, was that big target. And it's fair to say, I actually think Bolter and Lynch gave us something up forward the last couple of games. So the exciting thing for me, and look, Seth Campbell, fantastic, congratulations. But it's disturbing to me that Seth Campbell actually won our goal kicking in a way, if that makes sense. And that's, I know I'm sounding a bit negative tonight, but it's just, it should be asked about it. Lynch should have been, and maybe Seth second. But look, wonderful effort from a third year player.
Is he third or fourth for Seth?
Yeah. So third year players won our goal kicking from a flank, which is an exceptional effort on his behalf. Cannot believe he didn't make the All Australian under 22 team. Like,
I can't. I can.
So
he had a down patch at the wrong time.
I still think he's in the best 22 under 22s in the land, but that's just me.
Yeah,
sorry, what? Look, it is what it is. Good finish to the year from both, but we've got a lot of work to do with that connection forward of the ball next year, it's fair to say.
Yeah, that's the big part that's letting us down in a big, big way, because weirdly enough, like when we checked the stats afterwards, we actually matched them for a lot of categories and won some categories we don't usually win. So we had, I think, one less inside 50. Clearances were 30 each. We actually won contested possession by four. We won uncontested possession by 14. And in the last month, we've lost that stat by almost 70 to 100 every time. But the Cats were just super effective going inside 50, going at 61.8%. But again, Grock, one of the letdown stats for me was only having one or two tackles inside 50. So to CB's point, the connection has to get better when we go forward, but then so does the pressure to not let the ball come back out, because it just seems to walk out far too easily. We have no time to get repeat entries or to lock it in for any amount of time.
Yeah, that was the biggest takeaway for me in where we need to get better, besides the transition into the forward line. But it's just how slow we look on spread, especially when the opposition have the ball. They're running faster, they're running harder than us, and they're getting the uncontested possession. It was obvious against St Kilda a couple of weeks ago. It was really obvious against Geelong with just the speed on the outside. That's one of the biggest things. And Morris had that little purple patch there, but I thought he had an okay game. I wouldn't say it was great. That's where I would have liked someone like Steely in, just as another pressure with Geelong's runners, Bailey Smith, Max Holmes, their launch from half back. I think having a speedy half forward that pressures would have been handy. And no knock on Trainer or Gibkiss, but I think with the way that the forward line is functioning and the way that we move the ball in, we need some smalls in to help lock it in. And I think they probably would have contributed a little bit more than probably what Trainer did at the end. I think for me, one of the bigger positive signs was our clearance work. I thought, especially center clearances, that was probably the best we've looked coming out of the middle for probably since the bye, I reckon. We beat Geelong in that area. It was just the outside. Once the ball got out to the outside, that's where we were again exposed. So that's going to be the biggest need for our midfield, is just the outside speed and running.
What about the skill improvement? We talk about skills and us missing targets, but let's flip it quickly. The improvement of Ben Miller's kicking this year has been out of sight. There was one kick, and EG, you might have seen this being there live as well, the 45-metre bullet to Jacob Hopper on our side of the ground between a few Cats players. Like, we watched him line up the kick there. We're like, shit, surely not. And he's just lasered him. It just goes to show that even if you're already in the system and somewhat experienced, if you work hard enough, you can actually still improve your skill level quite substantially. Like, he and Tyler Young have made some unbelievable passes.
Oh, gee, I tell you what, you've just stolen the thunder there with Tyler Young. So on the weekend, Miller was our most accurate disposal efficiency, 94%, Short, 92%, and then Tyler Young, 82%. All we need from Miller is just a slight increase in the speed of decision making, which did improve through the year. It definitely did improve, because he has got a good boot. Yes, and that kick to drop it in the middle of the play, that was unreal. Yeah, no, he's been fantastic, Miller, this year. It's really a positive sign going forward that you've got Young and Miller. You can just put the names on the board and they're done. Week after, as long as they're fully fit, they'll be a pair going forward for the next 5 years.
Yeah, and it sounds like there'll be some selection pressures next year if all the other defenders are fit. CB Gibkiss, we obviously saw get through the game, which was really exciting to see. EJ, did you have a question?
Oh, selection pressures. That was mentioned in your magnificent presser when you asked about someone that we've mentioned a bit. Where did he say? Who did he say was our best defender? What was his name?
He might have said Noel Bolter. He sees as a defender. When I tried to almost pry out of him that he's going to be forward, but he went your way instead.
Can I just say, on little pressure, just while we're bringing up with old Triple M here, Mr. What were we called, EJ? Triple M? Mr.
Multimedia Michaels.
Multimedia Michaels. Old Triple M there in the top corner. First of all, outstanding job. But viewers, you've just got to understand the amount of text messages I got off Michaels just saying, oh, when I spoke to Adam, oh, when I spoke to Dan, oh, when I did this, I had to turn the phone off, guys. It was embarrassing. Wow. I was like, mate, lose my number. It was just
absolutely.
I didn't realize he had this type of big headness in him.
Who was hitting us up, Rick? Who was hitting us up for extra questions as well?
Oh, mate.
Just beforehand? Yeah.
Correct. I've got nothing, guys. I've got nothing. What do you got?
We had an earpiece going.
Well done, mate. Well done.
Jeez. No, it was magnificent.
But no, he did say Bolt was going to be a defender. So, yeah, that pretty much settles that. But that'll make next year interesting. But it was good to see Gibkiss get through a game. I found it interesting that there was some outroar by some people who thought it was bad that he wasn't told that he was going to be subbed. But I thought that was the smart move to not tell him he was going to be subbed. Like, I wouldn't have told the player before the game that they're going to be subbed, even if it was pre-planned. I would have thought that the way they did it was the right way to go about it, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of obvious once they named Trainer as the sub and Gibkiss on the field. As soon as that happened, you knew what was going to happen. It was going to be a straight swap, Gibkiss for Trainer. So, like, I will say I love the passion from Gibkiss, how filthy he was at being subbed, but also to Uze to sit down and actually just chat with him and explain the decision, I thought was really, really good coaching as well. And I saw some negative comments about that interaction saying it didn't look great, the optics were bad. But, I mean, you're looking at a guy who's played his first game in 500 and first AFL game in over 500 days. Like, yeah. He was always going to get subbed. And for Uze to just sit there and just reassure him and just explain it, I think that was a really, really good thing to see.
And I think that's the benefit of coaching from the bench, being able to have that actual conversation in real time, in person.
Yeah. And I reckon early doors, he looked a little bit off it, but I reckon in the second quarter, he looked comfortable. So I'm really glad that he got the game in.
And RFC Centre, I reckon that everyone watching held their collective breath every time he was sprinting after people. Even running to the bench, I was getting nervous. But no, he seemed to get through fine, which was good. And I suppose that he'll probably slot back into the VFL, which we'll talk about now too, because they won their wild card game against the Giants, which was awesome. They won by 18 points. So that means we are now into the fully fledged final series, which Gibkiss, I believe, should be able to be part of. Jacob Kaczynski, gents, had another big one. 4 goals, 10 disposals, 5 marks, 1 tackle. He's turning it on at the right time. I think he's still contracted for another year from memory, but he's been good going up forward. And I think they even threw him back at one point as well. But it was also nice to see Liam Fawcett kick 3 as well. 8 marks with a big tap. I think that's a really positive sign for him too in what was, I guess, his first full game back from injury. I think he had managed minutes the week before. But what a good story, though, for the VFL team, gents, to make it through the wild card round. They've been pillaged a lot of the year with our own senior injuries and then taking players up and then getting other players in. It's been a bit of a revolving door. So I think, firstly, let's give a massive shout-out to Jake Batchelor and the team for his first year as a coach. Getting into finals, I think, is a superb effort. Yeah, big game this week against Brisbane. We might see some troops getting back, though, EJ.
Yeah, well, I mean, you probably shed more light on that. Another quality question, the presser. It sounds like my boy might be making an appearance.
Can't you Townsend?
Sorry?
Who, Townsend?
Townsend.
McAuliffe. Sims. You got a few boys there, mate. You need to be more clear.
Townsend was last relevant about 1856, about the last time that I was relevant. Now, McAuliffe is a chance. And he did mention that maybe that Smiley might get some minutes.
I would feel very confident about Smiley playing this week. very much seems that they were very keen on him playing some type of football again. And I think similar to the Gibkiss storyline, that it's going to be better for his psyche and his mental development and belief in his body and things like that, assuming that he's over the quad injury. I won't be shocked if he's named. Lefau will get named as well. I think he was a week away from the last injury report. Harry Armstrong, he'd be a chance to go back and play too, Harry. I reckon. Which would be another good inclusion. Like, you kind of feel bad for some of the VFL guys who are probably going to get miss out on this experience because of the senior boys coming back. But from a purely selfish perspective, from the club going as far as they can, Grok, those names coming back in, we could give it a real shake, I reckon, if it all clicks.
100%. And I think, as you mentioned, credit to Jake Batchelor for getting the side to where they are, especially their VFL side was almost like our AFL side last year. They had makeshift forward line all year because of the constant revolving door from, you know, AFL level with the players coming in. So, you know, they've had Cozzy swinging forward, swinging back. Samson Ryan's been out. The three tools that we drafted have been getting games at AFL level. So there have been a lot of young, you know, suburban footballers coming in who are on the list and filling that slot. And then the midfielders have been kicking goals, obviously Rasso and, you know, Lucky Street and everything like that. So for them to be able to carry the workload to this point of the season in a very interrupted season for them, I think is really, really solid. And now we're going to get some quality players back. I think Sonzi is another one that could potentially go back to VFL level as well. So, yeah, it's really going to be interesting to see just who plays. And we talked about Smiley at the game, and I think seeing all the other draftees from, you know, this year playing extended minutes, and Smiley's only played the two, maybe three VFL games, I think if he can get named in there just towards the end of the year, obviously there have been, you know, rumours and speculation about Smiley and everything that's been going on behind the scenes, but how do you think Smiley would be feeling watching, you know, the players that he was drafted with, played alongside for a lot of his junior rep, playing at AFL level or even VFL level, and he's just sitting in the stands constantly frustrated because he's injured or going through, you know, the conditioning. I think if we can get him to at least a half of football on the weekend, I think it'll be a positive thing for him to end the season on and to build on for pre-season in a couple of months.
Agree. It will definitely be important for that. And I think there's a couple of guys who just played more than they played their 13th game, I think, in the Geelong game, which means that they aren't eligible to play. But Harry Armstrong will need permission, as will one or two others. But it doesn't sound like we'll apply for Tash Houghton. He seemed a bit cagey about that. But I'd play him, but that's just me. Go on, CB.
I was going to say, I'm also a big fan of the West Indian pace bowler in the Rezies, Joel Garner.
Joel Garner, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, okay, goes, thanks, mate. Yeah. Greeners did that joke about 8 weeks ago on Talking Tigers, mate. Glad of you to catch up.
Sandra Sully with the late news.
Yeah, Sandra Sully.
I'm just saying, it's just a reference, like, you know. But, I love the way he goes about it. He's he really sets a very good, really good example to the young blokes as well. From the
Harry Scott as well is increasing his draft stocks or his potential to get drafted as the weeks go by.
Hey, Tyler Young. Could Tyler Young play VFL?
I don't know how many AFL games he's played.
He would have only played maybe six or seven, I reckon.
Yeah, it's maybe another one that would be a chance to go back as well, potentially. That's a good shout.
Yeah
there's going to be there's going to be some names thrown up there to go back to strengthen up that, well, all parts of the ground, really, which would be good.
Go for the flag. If it's go for the frigging flag.
100%. Go for it. Yeah, why not? Why not? Yeah. All right, well, let's chat about an end-of-season review of sorts. We'll talk about a few different bits and pieces and keen to get everyone's thoughts in the comments as well. The first questions I want to ask all of you and everyone in chat, the answers probably are like it's either below expectation, met expectation, or above expectation. And then we can kind of talk about some of that as we go along. So maybe we'll go through one at a time. EJ, I'll give you the first one. The games won in 2025, we won five. Is that below, met, or above expectation? And any thoughts surrounding the five wins that we had for season 2025?
Any thoughts about the five wins? Beating Carlton in round one was delicious. Oof. Beating Gold Coast at Marvel was delicious. So, I think to the outside world, we've exceeded expectations. I would say we've met and or slightly exceeded expectations.
My other question is, do you think if we didn't beat Carlton round one, do you think we could have gotten above even 3 wins, or would have the weight of expectation just kept mounting and done us in?
I certainly think that a young side like that, the belief that you get, especially out of a comeback win, like to be so far down, I think that belief really gave us in the first half of the season some energy or some drive that we may not have had, and we might be talking about a 2 or 3 win season.
Yep, I agree. CB, we won back-to-back games during the season. Was that below expectation, met expectation, or was it above expectation?
To me, the whole season was met expectation. I had us at 3 to 5 wins. We finished on 5. So to me, that was the base aim of what I was hoping for. So if we had got that extra win, I would have said above. But 5, I'll say we met expectation in my eyes.
What about the back-to-back wins? Is getting back-to-back wins in a season where we were potentially struggling to look at getting wins, was that something that was below expectation? Did it meet an expectation, or was getting back-to-back wins above expectation?
It's all part of the season. I mean, look at the last month. We fought the fort, and then we got absolutely belted towards the end and didn't quite finish as strong either. So, no, I just said it's great to get 2 in a row, but overall, we still only won 5. So it doesn't matter where they fall.
It wasn't the overall. It was about the back-to-back. I'll answer Michael's. Winning back-to-back games was above expectation.
Yep.
I thought it was too, in a lot of ways, yeah. A little above. Yeah, a little above. Grok, we scored over 100 points once this season. Is that below expectation, met expectation, or above expectation?
I think that would be met expectations, only for the simple fact I think that was probably one thing that they bookmarked that they wanted to achieve this year, was at least crack the ton. I think there was that one. I also think another one that we met was no 100-point losses. I think that was another big one that they would have earmarked as well. So based on that, I think they're both probably met expectations. In regards to the wins, I'd say that's slightly above. But if we had knocked off North, GWS and Essendon, another 3 wins, it would have been way above expectations.
Far exceeding if we had dragged those ones as well. We took the next one. So we didn't lose a game by over 100 points. EJ, we'll go back to the start. Is that below, met, or above expectation? I know that's a low bar, but geez, there were some times where it looked a bit grim.
I think it's above expectation because I think it was expected that whilst we would be competitive for large chunks, that there would be the inevitable blowouts. And the fact that the blowouts were 70 to 80 points, not 100 points, I think that's above expectation.
Yeah, so I think so too. CB, would you agree with that? That it was I think we had a lot in that 60 to 80 to 90 point range, which isn't great, obviously. But when you sort of look at what we were doing last year, that a lot of those games that we did lose by bigger amounts would have most definitely blown out to bigger margins. So I think it was just showing a bit of fighting. Granted that it meant sometimes teams that we were playing against took their foot off the pedal, but we still had to score ourselves to reduce the margin, I guess.
Yeah. No, I'll say met.
I think we were lucky that Geelong only needed the win to guarantee a home final and not a win.
And not percentage. I know. Definitely. Next one. We finished the year on 66%. Would that be below expectation, met expectation, or above? It probably definitely can't be above, I wouldn't have thought. Unless there's a different view to that, EJ?
Below. I'd be looking at 75 as the marker.
Yeah, below. Yeah, agree.
Yeah, that was.
So it's not that easy to. It's not that hard to It's not that hard to agree with people, EJ. Don't be controversial all the time, mate.
No, I'm not. It's just not that hard to get off the bloody fence.
See, you say that, but I'm sort of sitting on the fence between below and met, only for the simple fact of inaccuracy. If we had a kick straight in a lot of games, our percentage would have been a lot higher. There were several games where we had 21, 22 scoring shots and still only kicked 6 goals. Whereas if we had even halved some of the behinds that we kicked, even like Tom Lynch from 20 out, 25 out missing, and a lot of snaps from the top of the square that didn't hit, just the expected goals that we should have had, I think we probably would have hit the 75, 80% mark if we had nailed them. So I'd go slightly below Matt.
What it highlights to me, 66% highlights to me the disconnect in our forward line and getting the ball forward as well. Like the amount of times we turned it over, or that first half of the year, we're just bombing long to Lynch, and it was just coming out. So we got smarter as the season progressed. And got to keep in mind, we played a fair chunk of the season, you know, without Lynch and without Bolter. And we had a forward line that consisted of Fall and Sims as your two key forwards as well. So there's a few factors to it, but you want to see improvement on that next year.
I think so, EJ. That's probably one of the ones that does have to improve. I'm with you. You want it to be, I mean, you'd love to be over 100, of course, but that's not realistic. But yeah, in the 70, 75 areas is kind of where you want it to be, and that just comes down to some conversion. What about playing? We played 7 of the 8 draftees from 2024. I'm assuming this is going to be above expectation, but was it below, met, or above? And what did you, were you happy with everyone's output of the debutants you played?
Who's for?
There you go.
Oh, look, I think in a perfect world with no injuries, maybe they wouldn't have all got debuts, but they did. I think on the whole, they probably performed at a higher level than what we thought they would. No one thought that Sims was going to do what he did. No one thought that Four was going to be as dynamic as what he was. And, you know, no one thought Trainer would play almost every game. So it's got to be above expectation, I think.
CB?
Again, EJ, easy to agree. I agree. I think...
Didn't hurt that much, did it?
I hurt. And that just... I agree with everything you said, mate. It's what... But I wanted to see the kids, right? And I was disappointed we didn't get to see Smiley, right? So I was absolutely stoked that they actually played all the draftees and gave him experience and put him in there. Really does sort of give the coaches something to work with next year with regards to different thoughts and where they can play them and what they can do with them. And with the talent that we saw on display with those guys that did play, above expectation for me.
Hey, Grok?
Yeah, definitely above expectation, especially given the tools. Obviously, Trainer, Sims, Fall and Armstrong. I mean, you know me, I've hyped Jonty Fall up for 18 months and even I was surprised that he managed the 14 or 16 games or something. It was close to two-thirds of a season, which given his injury history last year with the stress fractures and the hot spots in his back and his interrupted preseason, like, again, no one would have expected that he would have played as many games as he did. It's definitely above expectations. I think Lawler's injury was unfortunate. He probably would have played all 22 or 23 games, maybe a break in between one or two games. He should have played at least 20. Smiley was the disappointing one for me, especially when there were rumours early in the season that he was in line to make his debut when he copped the hammy early on. So it's going to be... it's definitely above expectations for me, and I think it's going to hold us in really good stead that we're getting the games into the bookends, so the defenders and the tall forwards, because at the start of, let's say, 2027, when they're 30, 35 games under their belt, we should be in a very good position. You look at what Amos was doing for Frio. You see what Logan Morris is doing for Brisbane. I think getting the games into them early, like Frio and Brisbane did with those two in particular, is going to really benefit us when Tassie comes in.
Yep.
Now, yep. Agree with all of that. Now, I was actually watching back, like I said, to some of the draft videos we did earlier on, and Sims was actually one that I said I couldn't see playing at all this year. So he's definitely... impressed and gone above and beyond what I thought he was going to do this year. And even Jonty Fall, just because of the back injuries he had and not having a preseason, I thought they might have taken just a bit longer to see him come in. But no, they've all been really impressive. And I think, you know, we can all see what Tash Hotton is going to become in a couple of years. He had a couple of iffy kicks on the weekend, but shit, he can find the ball well and he's got some great leap on him. And it's going to be, I think we're all looking forward to seeing We get a full preseason of the Taj, Smiley, Lawler gets a proper full preseason, and to see them all running around together, because really, I think Joan Dracing asked before, a lot of those players are almost going to be locks for the 23 by round one potentially, or not far off it. So it's going to be fascinating to see what that looks like.
I just give a shout out to the match committee for actually sticking with them and not taking the easy route by bringing sort of Blight or Cozzy or even Samson Ryan in and just backing the young forwards in themselves. I think that that just shows where the mindset is now. They're not taking any shortcuts, which is a really positive thing.
We couldn't use Ryan anyway, mate. She's been here for 8 weeks with a syndesmosis, so he ain't had his first game back in the week as well.
But the start of the year.
Yeah, it is good they stuck with their guns and enrolled them and just kept, let them keep going. The last one in terms of below expectation, met expectation, or above expectation, the game style / ball movements. Now, I guess where this one becomes interesting is it's not something that we knew we weren't going to see what we wanted to see over four quarters, but when you did see what you thought was the Richmond way and what we wanted to try and do, had that met expectation or was it above expectation? What do we need to work on? Like, can you get everyone's thoughts? It's probably a hard one to answer, but we'll see how we go. EJ?
I feel like I'm reading my child's school reports too, just quietly. Below expectation. I think we met expectation. It took a while for it to become clear and evident. So obviously we've been working on something, but I think by the end of the season, when we move the ball now, you can see what we're trying to do. And also of note, in the last 6 to 8 weeks of the season, we started to rank quite highly on turnovers to forward 50 entries. So we're not, the connection isn't there when we get there, but we're setting up defensively and moving the ball well down to the forward 50 in the last 10 weeks. So it is coming together. I think to exceed expectations or to be above expectations, we would have needed to have seen a few more scores above 100 points that shows that that connection is working properly. But it's a work in progress, but I like what I'm seeing.
CB?
I'll answer it this way. Before the bye, we were below expectation. And then after the bye, we met expectation. We improved exponentially after the bye with how we were moving the ball. But it's a bit hard to answer the game style ball movement because I personally wasn't happy with the on-ball setup of Hopper, Taranto, Prestia constantly. Now, they all played some good football during the year, but my frustration was we just didn't have enough outside speed in there, and we just all of a sudden you'd wait till the game's gone and we're into the last quarter, then Seth Campbell might get a run in there, or MRJ or Houghton. And we should have mixed and matched a bit more earlier during the year. We're getting done anyway. It didn't matter. So I don't know if it was game style or ball movement. I'd just say some of the setups frustrated me at times, which led to our demise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Matt, makes sense. Grok?
See, I'm with CB in that first half, so pre-buy was definitely below expectations. After the buy, I think it's met. If we talk about the season as a whole, I almost go below expectations just on ball movement, considering what Uze said pre-season was that there's going to be a lot more focus on moving the ball quickly and through the corridor, and I don't think we saw it as much as we probably should have, whether that's because they wanted to limit, turnovers, or we didn't have, the skills to actually execute it. But I just think making such a bold statement pre-season and then waiting for the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season to implement that, I think that set up a lot of failed expectations in a lot of supporters' minds with the way that we were moving, and even a lot of people were still complaining that they don't see a lack of game plan. So I think in that, if that's the case and there's still people out there that are questioning what our ball movement is, I think it's got to be a below expectations.
Can I just go back a step, though? Mm. Apparently you did a presser, Michael's, on Friday at Richmond. And one of those questions where Uzay actually answered, he actually answered that a bit. Because remember, you asked him, I can't remember what you asked, but he said he was teaching the kids and we were sticking to a certain style.
The tagging one? The
kids. So he was actually holding some moves back in a way to educate. Can you elaborate on that? Because that actually answers a little bit where people saying Uzay can't coach and da-da-da. He actually answered that component in the presser on Friday.
Yeah, he actually did answer the question that a lot of people asked him about that he didn't give them the answer to. So in relation, I asked if we were going to send someone to Max Holmes or Bailey Smith because they get quite a lot of the football. And he said that they're not because if they were to send Jack Ross or someone to Bailey Smith, then that's going to take away midfield minutes from Seth Campbell, Tash Houghton, and so on. So he's like, we would rather get the minutes into those kids and give them the exposure than to tag an opposition player. So they're putting that as the preference and priority, which when you word it that way, I kind of agree with it because you can't have it both ways. Like, and it's funny he said it the way he did because you can actually see the pattern of supporters over the past month saying, oh, tag player X, Y, and Z, we'd do it. And then we'd all be like, oh, but why didn't he get CBAs? So we were kind of wanting everything all at once, but it doesn't work that way. So they had to pick one or the other, and they were picking to give the kids some exposure, which I think was fair enough. But it was good that he actually opened up and gave the actual answer to it. I thought it was interesting.
So your question was shit then?
Yeah, yeah.
your question you made his answer here in the rundown, no good.
No good, that's right, no good. I look back, in terms of the ball movement stuff, I look back to the pre-season games against Collingwood and West Coast, and we've come a long way since then. I do tend to agree, though, that before the bye was a bit more of a struggle, and post-bye, which funnily enough, I thought we were going to get worse in the back half of the year and get tired and run out, but we seem to have some really good moments. And like you look at the West Coast game and the way we sort of sliced them up, and I know they're at the same level as us, but that's what you kind of want to see and expect when you're playing against a team at your level. So the fact we could execute that at such a high level away in a game that they were hoping and believing they should have won, I thought was a really good sign. But I think we do let ourselves down quite a lot with the stuff front of centre, which is no surprise to anybody. But I do think that we're building a solid foundation from the back line, causing the turnover and working the ball out, but we just have no understanding of what's happening after that. Like the amount of goals on turnover that we left behind was quite extraordinary, to be honest. Yeah. But again, the game plan for me is a layered thing. It's like a tiered cake. We're at base level at the moment, so next year you want to see a bit more added and do some things differently. The one other part of the game I want to see differently, and we talked about this, Grok, on Saturday, was when we have the ball in like defensive 50 and the other team's sort of pushed up the ground, we do often, as we all know, just kick it long down the line. I want to see us use those back three guys quickly and switch it across to shift the zone. Like the one or two times we shifted Geelong's zone, we actually were able to then pierce through it because they were kind of a bit more unorganized. And other teams do it to us relentlessly, and that's how they pick us apart so easily. So I just want to see that switch, move it around the other side, and just shift zones back and forth with quick decision-making, to EJ's point most weeks. You've got to do that quickly. And I think we would actually see a larger amount of scoring chances evolve because of that. But we'll see what happens there.
Can I just answer a question there? Ashley Lott's gone, North are also at our level, and they killed us. No, North are not at our level, and their ladder position does not belie the talent that's on that list. If they didn't have yesterday's hero as their coach and had someone maybe a bit more current or up to speed on a few things, that list should be playing finals football or be just on the verge of their ladder. They've got too much talent at least to be sitting in the bottom four with us. They've got some absolute guns in that squad. So
We did have a shit one.
We did.
So touching on that comment just before, CB, about the movement, again, I think we're not utilising our runners or the players with pace when we go long down the line. They're the ones that we're kicking to in a contest, like MJ and Seth Campbell, 2-on-1. Yeah. They shouldn't be the ones that are there. They should be the ones that are offering the outlet kick on the other side of the wing where we can, if we need to, kick to space and have them run onto it. But by having them in the contest, it's taking away, you know, what makes them dangerous, in that it's just going to get locked down. They've got no space to run into or to take the game on or anything. Have the slow turtles down the line and have the speedy ones on the outside so they can actually utilize it when the ball hits the deck.
So even though they haven't made finals, look at the Dogs. When they kick down the line, they're either aiming at Sam Darcy or they're aiming at Norton. They're always aiming at big bloke and their small blokes are running through. We name three talls in that forward line every Saturday and somehow we're aiming at like 5'5" midgets. So I don't know where the big blokes are. And you're right. You're right.
I reckon MJ got caught in a we kicked to MJ in a 2-on-1 contest at least a dozen times against Geelong at half.
Unbelievable stuff.
It's insanity.
Now, I just want to read out some stats quickly. So these are season average stats. This is from RT, who posted this on one of the threads on Big Footy. It's a good bit of research he's done here. I'll probably more so read out the ones that we obviously need to improve on, which, to be fair, was almost all of them. Points for season per game, we ranked 18th. So we've got to improve on that. Disposals per game, 338. We ranked 17th, so we've got to improve there. Marks per game, we actually ranked 11th, which is probably higher than I thought. But opposition disposals per game, we rank number one. So we're letting opposition get way too much of the ball, which I think we knew with that uncontested piece that was happening. Marks inside 50 per game, 9, ranked last. So that's another one we've got to turn around, especially with these key forwards that we've got. We've got to, and it goes back to all of your point, don't just bomb it in, hit up leading targets and let's try and actually make the most of that. Tackles per game, 52, ranked last. I know that's been a bit of a bugbear for a lot of supporters. We need to get that up. Inside 50s per game, 8th, ranked last. So that's not great either. Contested possessions per game, 122, ranked 17th. Total clearances per game, 33, ranked 17th. Center clearances per game, 9, ranked last. So you can see a bit of a trend there. It shouldn't be a big surprise given where we're at, but now we've got some stats to measure ourselves against next year and make sure we are seeing improvement. And I know we talked about the midfield mix for a lot of the year, but even a bit tonight, it did feel like that we were maybe protecting some of the mids a bit more. I kind of got the sense after Friday that we were going to be a lot more adventurous and see a lot more different names more so next year. We have to see that. I don't think we want to, we have to. It's a bit of a non-negotiable now. Especially, I know, EJ, we talk a lot about the quality of clearance and the amount of times that, you know, as much as I love what Taranto and Hopper did all year and the work rate they had, but the amount of times they would get the clearance with a hat kick forward against opposition midfielders who are bursting out and hitting up lace-up passes, it makes such a big difference to a team's ability to score.
Yeah, I mean, we need to pare back drastically the amount of times they're in the centre square together. They've both still got a massive role to play over the next few years, don't get me wrong. They've both had fantastic seasons, but when we look at the things like the, you know, so low for clearances and so low for tackles and things like that, if we can get some speed around the ball in the centre square to match the grunt, we'll be tackling opposition players and they won't be bursting out. Mm. And we'll be getting out of the centre contest, whatever, shit, I'm struggling here, ourselves. If we change that midfield mix to a more dynamic mix, a lot of those numbers will automatically start to self-adjust.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we'll see everything start to change accordingly. Another one we'll bring up now, this is more of a list profile piece, which I thought was really interesting. Again, this is some work from RT, which was really, really cool to see, actually. But it just gives a bit of a breakdown of the players in different positions and the amount of games that they've played. So you can see we've obviously got a substantial amount of players in that 0 to 49 game category. And a lot of those are going to tip into the next bracket of 50 to 99 games. And we've got obviously a few here for 150 to 199 games and then some of the older heads as well. But it just shows the gaping hole in an age bracket in that 100 to 149 games that have got that 3-4 years of experience behind them and starting to find their own. That's where we're lacking quite a bit, and even the 50 to 99 games. But when you see a list like that, gents, what kind of things do you see in that that you, I mean, I'm not sure how much we can change, but things we need to maybe address? Clearly, this second column, the outside midfielder, is one that we need to address somehow. But is there anything else in this list that you would say that rings alarm bells? We need to target X, Y, and Z to try and address it.
I think it shows we've got to be patient. It shows you in 2027, how many of those 0 to 49 move into your 50 to 99 bracket, which is where you want a lot of your list, that's when they really start kicking on. So we have to be patient, just understand we've got to take our licks next year. And next year, if we can get six wins, probably a pretty good year, you know. But it shows you our rucks are a concern. Rucks are a massive concern. And our key forwards are just, they just need time, to be honest. It's not a negative. It's just how it is. It's
reality. Yeah.
Yeah.
You nailed it. The three columns for me that are the most pressing needs are the more experienced outside midfielder, so 25, 26 year old outside mid, a key forward in case Lynch, heaven forbid, something happens to him next year, and the rucks. I think if Nant goes down, we're in a serious pickle next year. It's probably the biggest question mark going into this preseason for me. It's probably the biggest need. Yes, we crack on about you know, lack of speed and everything like that, but we've got players who can actually come in, whereas the rucks, Hayes Brown is untried. He's developing nicely, but he's 25, 26 years old as well. So again, even Kalina is 24, 25. We've got no one in that middle age bracket with AFL experience that can come in as a ruckman to help Nank out if... because it's obvious that Nank is winding down. I think the last 6 weeks especially, you've really started to see he looks sore. Even on the weekend, he got belted by Reece Stanley in a lot of contests. So, yeah, I think those three are the three biggest issues for me. And if we're going to recruit a mature ager or someone with experience, I think we definitely need a ruckman.
But keep in mind too, you're looking at general forward, Campbell and Lawler and Houghton in that group will all slide into the outside mid category next year.
I think that was in RT's post that some of those will shuffle across depending on how they all line up next year too. The ruck one is interesting. With the speculation of there being five on the interchange instead of the sub, would that be a time where you would then start playing a genuine second ruck? Do you reckon teams are going to do that? Like, could Hayes Brown play a role in that capacity to give Nank a trop, like a genuine trop out during games? Because Sims worries me a little bit with that syndesmosis or whatever, the navicular, and how that might play out. CDT, even if we were to draft him, he's not going to be ready for 4 or 5 years. So I don't think that's the solution whatsoever, unless we draft or like trade in for someone. But if we don't do that, do Ryan or Hayes Brown get some game time if it goes to five on the bench, EJ?
I would be hesitant myself. If you have another player go down, all of a sudden you're really top heavy for rotations during the game are quite limited. I think a capable second ruck like a Bolter or a Lafau can do the job. I don't think we need to go in with two full rucks. But there's not many clubs that do it. It's working okay at Freo, granted, but there's not many clubs that run a genuine two ruck.
That's fair enough. I'd be happy with Bolter to do the backup rucking stuff. See, we actually thought he plays that role quite well.
Yeah, agree. Big unit, strong, quick. Yeah, I agree.
So then from I don't know if any of us, I don't have any names tonight from an inside word perspective, but from a spitballing ideas perspective, should we be looking to trade in to try and fill this 100 to 149 game mark to bridge the gap between some of these big variances we've got between the age brackets?
I think
because if we go and take our two draftees this year, we're just adding to this first column. We're actually not solving this part of the game, and it might cause some prolonged pain.
Yeah, I think the main one that you can really look at targeting is Windhager from St Kilda as the outside mid who can run, patrol the wing. Like, I think he's genuinely the one that's most gettable. It's outside midfielders at this point, clubs are really holding on to because of the way the game's going, where outside run and foot speed is the way that a lot of the the better sides are playing. Like Brisbane have got Berry, they've got McCluggage who patrol the wing. They're good runners. Finn Callahan from GWS, you know, Flanders and everything from Gold Coast. The outside pace is where the game is going. So for clubs in the 100 to 149, you want to keep them. They're going to be the core that are still going to be there in 5 or 6 years. So a lot of them will be hesitant to actually trade any of them out. So it's going to be difficult to address that.
And it's interesting because, Tiggs has been saying that he's pretty adamant that we're going to bring in two players, not A graders, but like your Bs that can hopefully get to As, but are in that kind of bracket that maybe are in the tire end of the 99, tipping into the 100. So it'll be interesting to see where we go in that space. But I guess the worry as well, EJ, is that at some point in the near future, I mean, we know that Nathan Broad's last year is next year. He said that himself. Lynch and Prestia, we'd be hazarding a guess that they would be either next year or the year after. And Vlosten, it kind of feels like we probably need another 2 or 3 years out of Nick Vlosten. But the trick's going to be to not have all of these guys retire all at once. If we can somehow have it staggered to let everything else catch up, we mightn't feel it as bad.
Yeah, I think Vlosten has to stick around for 2 to 3. I think, as you said, Prestia, Lynch, Broad probably finish up next year. How much longer? How old's Nag? 31?
No,
I'm
not
that
old.
31, because Broad, Lynch, Prestia and Broad are the three oldest on the list.
Right. He's starting to look quite beaten up.
Yep.
So you're probably looking at maybe 2 more years out of him. And as the rucks get beaten up when they're older, they tend to miss more football. So the positive is that after that, you haven't really got many falling away for quite a few years. So we've just got to stagger the next 2 seasons well, and then we should be right.
Yeah, Nank, for me, I think there's a chance he probably goes in, maybe plays 1 year at Tassie if he really wants to. I think just obviously being Tassie and the chance to represent Tassie at AFL, I think he may stick around for, but I don't want us to do to Nank what we did to Marich, where we, like, yes, he's a workhorse, but we absolutely flogged him. Like, and it's getting to that point with Nank now where you can tell that we're grinding him down. And I think with Nank, I think next year, if we can get a ruckman and leave Nank behind for every interstate game and just keep him, so one game off every 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I think that'll go a long way to preserving him for another 1 or 2 years.
And I know a lot of people up on the Gold Coast, and he's
loyal willing to
bide his, and he's willing to bide his time because Witz is quite a bit older. There are a few out there that you could possibly pry loose. There's an excess at Hawthorn. They've got Ramsden and Reeves. Yep. So there is genuine BC grade ruckman. And I'm of the Grant Thomas philosophy that you don't overinvest in rucks. There's genuine BCs out there that would be looking for an opportunity to play first team football, and I think we can offer it. So I think that this is a situation that should sort itself out this off season.
Tell me Moyle's nicknames, Snip or Snipper. think about it, folks. Just.
Oh, it's just hit me.
Thank you. Try the veal.
Now, the last topic to talk about here are the out of contract crew for 2025. So I'll read out these names and we'll get everyone's thoughts. We'll just go around the room. I guess, EJ, based on your table, I'm guessing we're just going to go with as simple as keep, trade the list. Campbell Gray, EJ.
Keep.
CB?
Keep.
Grok?
Keep.
I'm absolutely of the keep. He looks every bit an AFL player when he's playing. Cut deep. Not bad.
Oh, yes.
Not bad. Well played.
Yes. He's feeling it. He's feeling it.
What have we turned into? We're getting cancelled. Dion Prestia.
Keep.
The list. CB.
Oh, you're still on that bandwagon. Grok.
Who is this? Prestia?
Dion Prestia.
I think, see, it's tough, but I think keep one more year. Get him to 250.
I agree for one more year as well. As long as there's no promise or guarantee to play 22 games, I think we have to hand over the mantle at some point. But from an experience point, and he had a really good last game, didn't he, to RFC's point, 30 and two goals, not bad.
Yeah. That's why I said it was tough, because if it comes down to getting games into Lawler as a midfielder, Smiley to come in, or McAuliffe, you got to give them to the three youngers.
You really notice when you're there live, you really notice his lack of pace and inability to keep up. But his brain puts him in the right positions that other people aren't ready to get to those positions yet. And we've all seen the four-minute clip where he was mic'd up. He's basically a coach out in the ground for us.
He's doing karaoke, mate. Singing Billy Joel's greatest hits. The guy has not got no pace. He can't run. His legs are this big. He can't. He's done. We've got to find space for Lawler, Houghton, McAuliffe, Campbell. All those guys have to come in. Even Smiley. They have to start getting.
How many of those are injured? How many of those are injured? Right? You have a squad of 40, not a team of 23. He's not going to play every game. You keep him there for the experience. That's what he's there for.
It's an assumption.
I do remember that solo. I was completely floored when that came out. I could not believe that after what we had been through. That was one of the most bizarre decisions I've ever seen. Jacob Bauer, EJ.
Sad. Bad timing. Delist.
CB.
Unfortunately, I really wanted this kid to kick on, but sorry, red ink.
Grok?
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah, the list.
Unfortunately, I tend to agree. Probably he had the chance at the start to cement the spot, but it just hasn't worked out. Jacob Blight, EJ?
Trade or the list?
CB?
Trade or the list.
Grok.
See, I'd keep him, but he's getting traded. He won't be at the club next year.
Yeah, the fact we didn't play him to trigger the extension strongly suggests that he's getting traded. Although there was a reasonable argument made that why wouldn't we have triggered it to then try and get more out of it? But I don't think he will be there next year. Caleb Smith, EJ.
D-list.
CB.
The list.
Grok.
It pains me, but the list.
I'm not sold on that one yet. He does some really good.
Like a really nice kid, but I think there's a big gulf between what some of the other fringe 23 players are putting out and what he's putting out. I think we have to make space.
I think with Smith, I think the worst thing that's happened for him is Banks.
Yeah.
Banks this year. I think that just solidified it.
I think the position he's fighting for is very well occupied, which makes it very difficult. But I agree. I think he's got potential, but he's just fighting it hard to crack into the team. What else we got next? Cameron McIntosh, we already know. Kalina?
D-list. Let's end the experiment.
CB?
Mate, I was saying back in 2024, the list with a capital D.
Grok.
Yeah, D-list, especially with with the snack pack looking pretty good.
I was happy we kept him this year. I thought we owed it to him to see how it panned out because we mismanaged him last year with a back injury. But it's not worked how I think everyone had it hoped, unfortunately. Hayes Brown, I think he's come on leaps and bounds. I'm a definite keep here.
I'm a keep. He's going to be like Ivan, the late bloom. He's going to play games next year.
I think he would have played this year had he not hurt himself.
Yeah. I'm going to say keep. He's going to be like a Vaughn. He's going to bloom.
Oh, Grok.
Burn punt road down if we do delist him with the list management. Yeah, got to keep him.
Yeah, I'm liking Hayes Brown. This is going to hurt this one, I think. Thompson Dow.
Just quickly, Grok, a bit late if you want to burn punt road down, mate. They blew it up a couple of weeks ago.
Aristotle Pickett was chained to the fucking pole. Went down with it.
Oh, the Swinburne Centre. The Swinburne Centre is still standing.
Yeah, Thompson Dow. I will keep. And I realise when I say that, there's going to be people saying he's no good. He's again, it's a squad of about 40 players. You need depth. He presents depth. He has played how many games? I can't remember the old chart. He's played a few. We know that he can provide service when called on.
Dow is, I'm trying to find him on my list.
Surely he'd be on
45 games. Oh, CB, Thompson Dow.
50 game banner for him.
Given that I cut Prestia up, do I have to have one extra keep?
No, you can do what you want, mate. This is Rogue Nation.
I'm keeping him.
Grok.
Yeah, I'd keep him. He's the one that comes in for Prestia if Prestia doesn't play, in my opinion. Just as I'm that keeping two-way him runner.
Too. Comes in, plays a good role, looked actually quite settled and was doing his role really, really well until he got hurt. I'm definitely keeping him. Where'd my list go? I lost my list. Oh, here we go. Tyler Young. Jeez, this has to be
keep. How many years?
I mean,
a multi-year extension. Let's go.
You know, a four, three or four-year extension?
Three.
CB?
Yeah, three-year extension.
Oh, my gosh. Grok?
Keep him, lock him up in Groupies Dungeon and only let him out for captain's runs and game days.
Jesus. Is that reward or punishment? I'm not sure what that is.
Oh, that needs to be a club doco.
And then the one that's probably going to divide everybody, Tyler Sonzi.
Much to the shock of some people, I say keep. I know he has his issues. But again, it's a squad of 40, and there has been signs this year that there's something there. I know on the weekend there was the panic and the handballs over the head, which shit me no end, but there's been some really good disposal the last couple of weeks, and he's actually strung together some games of sort of, you know, that of merit. I haven't seen any blinders, but of merit. Unless you've got something to replace for one more year, I would keep.
CB?
Look, thinking about it, I'd definitely keep him for one more year.
Jeez, you're an idiot. You really are.
What?
So you're keeping Grok?
I'm letting him go. Again, on the weekend, the last couple of weeks, it's just been no urgency for a player that's fighting for a contract. And if it comes down to keeping Dow or Sonzi, I'd be keeping Dow ahead of Sonzi.
Wow, you shocked with Andy.
I'm with Hayden. I would go 1 year and then have like a 1 year trigger. You need to make him earn it as well, but. It'll be interesting to see what happens. What worries me is some of these guys have yet to receive the contract offer to the best of our knowledge, and the season's done. So it'll be interesting to see where we go and when our exit interviews are, which I imagine would be in the next week or so, given today would have been a Mad Monday, whatever happens these days. But there's going to be some big decisions to be made this year with that amount of players that are out of contract. Again, I can't help but stress that I reckon we have one of the best teams in place that do our contract work and the reshuffling and rejigging. So they're well on top of that. And we've got plenty of space in the cap too. So this, again, kind of feels like there's still something yet to play out. I know, David, you mentioned it earlier, that we aren't sitting on our hands. We are being active and trying to shake things. So we'll have to see where that one lands. The other thing I want to bring up quickly before we wrap up is I really hope this new rule eventuates from the AFL. I know we knocked the AFL for a lot of things, but if they can bring in the father-son ban on top-end picks for next year to make Cody Walker available to us again, that would be extraordinarily humorous for multiple reasons. And it sounds like, I mean, with all jokes aside, you got Cal Toomey and a lot of other higher-up people saying that it's going to happen, but whether it's the top 10 or top 15 picks won't be able to be bid on, that is going to make things very interesting next year. In a year, whether we like this or not, where I think we are going to be finishing in the bottom three or four of the ladder again, and you've got players like Dougie Cochran, you've got Cody Walker available, makes it very, very interesting if this comes into play.
The melts will be glorious if
we might. We might have to get our source on the ground to do some more investigation work for us to see what he can find out.
Yeah, that like the melts will be glorious if we end up with Cody Walker. If we end up with Walker, Armstrong, Daffy, and Lees, that would just be fantastic next year.
It would be very good. But that is a. A season wrap.
Hang on. I have a very quick, something was brought to my attention and I'm going to interject with a late come on man here.
Oh, hang on. Let me.
No, you don't need to. I'm just going to go off the cuff.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Come on, man.
I am in my sights is Richmond Big Footy Board.
Oh, okay. Go on.
Yeah. I know that times are tough, but it has come to my attention that when talking trades and things like this, that there are people on the Richmond Big Footy Board discussing the merits of bringing Dylan Shield to our club. Now, I'm not going to say anything else except for, come on, man.
I've got one better. On some of the supporter groups on Facebook, there have been people floating the idea of bringing Treloar into the club. Shield has nothing negative to say about Richmond. Treloar, yeah, vomit-inducing.
We're only in August and we've already hit silly season. Like the season hasn't even... Technically, the season hasn't finished. We've got a game Wednesday. And already it's like people are just shooting heroin and talking shit online. Like, stop it, people.
Don't do drugs, kids.
David, you've mentioned this a few times, and I get harassed, I'm going to say weekly, about who the player is. I won't announce it publicly, but if you could just send me a cheeky inbox message so I can try and either defuse or whatever. To me, it feels like it's out of three... If we were to take a stab in the dark right now at who that could be, so the question is, well, the comment is, a current finals team have asked permission to speak to one of our best players. They have our and the player's attention. If that's true, and we're taking a stab in the dark, surely it can only be Taranto, Hopper, Vlosten. Would you throw Miller and Bolter in that category? No.
Look down in the Brady Bunch thing. Look down below you to Grock. He's making faces and stuff.
Yep.
Faces and stuff.
Does it go well with pasta?
No.
What?
Ooh.
Oh, right. So, okay, yeah.
I'll put it in chat just for you guys. The private chat.
Make sure you do the right one here.
don't mind us.
That's what I've been hearing.
Oh no.
That's what I've heard. They've approached his management and I won't say keen on it, but he's considering. Yeah, all I'll say is it's...
That ties into what EJ said.
Yeah, it's a defender. A defender, that's all I'll say.
Wow, interesting. Wow. Okay, well, we'll have to... I don't know when we can... We probably won't know if we will, whether we will ever say that publicly. God damn, that would be real shit if that happened.
Yeah.
Real shit.
Before we go, though, on a positive note, can I just say thank you to all the Richmond supporters who stuck around to cheer Capsy off at the end of the game on Saturday. It was absolutely fantastic. And what a song to have Capsy, you know, leave the field to. Working class, man. Working I think class, that just man. That just sums up McIntosh to a T, just ultimate working class man for the club.
No, it was good. Were there any other come on man nominations? Or was it just the Dylan Shear one?
Yeah, there's it was a long show we've been on, so I sort of but Geelong Football Club just gets stuffed. Like seriously.
For which part?
So let's we have to paint the picture here, right? Melbourne sides play games in Melbourne and they generally go away about six games a year, right? They travel about six times. Interstate sides, they have a one-sided home crowd, but they travel 11 times a year, 11 times a season. Geelong have the one-sided crowd, but they only have to travel like a Metro Melbourne side, and they're crying again about not being able to play finals in their toilet bowl. Just get stuff.
They're just an unlikable club on so many levels now. Their level of arrogance.
Come on, man.
Continuing on with Geelong, Tom Stewart again. I'm not sure if anyone saw this in the dying seconds of the game, but there was an incident between him and Morris Rioli where Stewart has gone down to pick up the ball, saw Morris coming, like put his hands up, not getting the ball, went past it and got him in the head. Morris stayed down for, I'd say, a good 10, 15 seconds before getting up. It wasn't even looked at by the MRO.
Yeah.
Absolutely
he's just
disgusting.
Clumsy. Grock, he's just clumsy. He's had 150 games of just clumsiness of just cannoning into blokes. It's just
come on, man.
Yeah. And the last one, and this is to the Richmond Football Club.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and we talked about this, Michael's at the footy. Camden McIntosh's last game.
He's
got a nice fashion statement that we've all appreciated this year. In his final game, his farewell game, how has the club not organised fans to have a headband to send the great man off in the crowd? I mean, that's a bit of a wasted opportunity. If Geelong can do the wide-out game for Dangerfield and have, you know, white T-shirts, surely the club could have organised, you know, a $2 headband for supporters for the game. I think it was just, I think having a headband would have been a nice touch.
Would have been cool. I mean, to be fair, you're just a bit pissed off the Amazon one isn't going to arrive yet still. No, that's all fair enough. Well, that is somewhat of a review done for this year. Like I said, there are going to be some other shows that pop up that we're going to do. Whether we're going to do them as lives or pre-records, I'm not too sure, but there's a heap of stuff we want to do. Like we want to rank every player for the year, like a school report, pass mark. EJ wants to go through some stats and talk about all that stuff too. So yeah, there'll be bits and pieces in the pipeline, no doubt. So they'll keep an eye out for more of those lives. But other than that, I just want to say a massive thank you to everybody this year for your love and support. And a big thank you to everybody who does come and say hello to us in public as well, whether it's at the footy or at the local shopping center, wherever it might be. It's always cool to have people come up and say that they're fans of the show and they appreciate what we do. It does mean the world to us all. I don't know if I'll do it's not really a final farewell, but thank you, gents, for all of your time this year too. I know it can sometimes be tricky to get the whole crew, but when it does, it generally gets quite good feedback. So everyone does love having everybody on when we all can. So I appreciate all the effort that you all put in to be on the show. So the Wednesday night show, for those who asked, there, it won't be Wednesday because it is actually my birthday and I don't know what time I'll be home. But I think Tiggs and I might jump on Friday so he can have his say and share his info as well and give his thoughts on the season too. But no, thank you to everybody again for everyone's love and support. And, you know, it just shows the strength of the show. It's gone from strength to strength, grown in numbers. The live views are up every week, so we appreciate everyone tuning in. And, yeah, it's good fun. It's good fun. Yeah.
A big thank you to everyone who purchased a stubby holder or a football this year as well. We truly do appreciate that as well.
Absolutely. But
and I'll just sign off on, I had a chat to Michaels earlier today, and I may struggle to get onto the show next year. So if I don't pop up too often moving forward, it's been a pleasure. I've just got something that's an opportunity might be finalized on Wednesday that I'll be taking up and doing. So it might take up a bit of time, which will impact the other days off. So
thank you. Coaching Melbourne. He's coaching Melbourne. Yeah.
He'll come out of the woodwork on a win.
Okay, I'll fess up. I'm starting an OnlyFans. And Monday night's going to be hard for me. I'll be pole dancing. But look, in all seriousness, thank you to everyone for your love and support. I'll still be involved with the show and I might crash a few episodes or what have you. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how my time shakes out and what I can do. So yeah, thank you.
Very good. I want to give Nick Rerikus, he's got the same birthday as me. So happy birthday, Nick, for later in the week. And I think Tubby Josh as well said his birthday's the same too. There you go. A few of us sharing the same day. Walking Stick. Jeez, I'm only going to be turning 38. My goodness. I get enough shit around the house about how old I'm turning. Bloody hell. But no, thank you.
Nuclear days, that's a question for Michaels. Are there any footies left for sale?
Yes. Yes, and a shite load of stubby holders. Yes. So if anyone is interested, feel free to shoot us a message and we can get that organised. But yeah, appreciate everyone's time and love in a season that was a bit more difficult than what we would have liked, but we all understand where we're at as a footy club and we look forward to bigger and better things. Yes, we'll have to see what happens in the coming months and into next year. But have a wonderful night, everybody. And until next week, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go VFL Tigers. Stick it up.
Yes.
Yes.